Donnell from King Valley.
My name is Donald. I'm an alcoholic. I think I should pan back a little, huh?
A little louder. Oh, I'm loud, aren't I?
A lot of mixed feelings coming here to this place. My first convention was here, the Southern California Convention in 1970, October of 1970. I was 6 months over. I got 12 rooms in Motel 6, so they were clean, they were economical. I gave them out to different people from my home group and filled out too many rooms. I was so excited about being up here. And I wound up one room short, and I had to sleep with some old-timer that had a month and a half on me. But because I made the reservations, I got the choice of the bed. So I took the vibrator bed. Remember the vibrator bed? And put a quarter in, vibrate for 20 minutes, and trip off to Happy Land, right? So we went to the convention here, and went to all the meetings, and spent hours here, and went in kind of late. And this is the, not Bill O'Brien's motel. This is Motel 6 on, right off California. Anyway, on Oak. Why do I know that? Because I had a lot of motel room there. Anyway, so we come in kind of late, and this guy jumps in his non-vibrator bed, right? How about three quarters back, perfectly? I threw the first quarter in, this guy started too much sleep, and he started snoring. And he snored through all three of my quarters. And I don't know when I finally fell off to sleep. And the next morning, I was over in the hospitality center here, and getting some coffee, trying to recover from the night before, right? Not getting enough sleep. And I spotted my sponsor, and I went over and I told him, "Ring his teeth. Keith, I couldn't get any sleep. Kirk snored all night." And he told me what to do. That's what sponsors are for. And so we went to the meetings and went to the marathon meetings, spent hours there again, coming in again real late. This guy jumped in his non-vibrator bed, Bill. And I went over and I tucked him in and I kissed him on the lips to me. And he stayed awake watching me all night. And I got him asleep, so I went. Got a laugh, I'm sensitive. So I told you to have a sponsor. Anyway, it's a pleasure to be here. I want to thank the 2001 Roundup Committee for allowing me to be here. I heard Matt last night, and that was exciting. I heard the Alamont speaker. That was depressing. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Anyway, I'm here to tell you what it was like, and what it was like. Because that's what I had when I showed up in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been coming for 10 years to Alcoholics Anonymous by way of the courts, and never got 30 days. Got 21 days one time at the Nest in Receiver, and they didn't have a 21-day shift. That's the most I could get. I got the big book because they said, they made the announcement that if you don't have the big book, we don't want you to leave without the big book. If you don't have the funds, we understand that. We'll make liberal credit arrangements. But don't leave without the big book, even if you have to steal it. And so I stole it. I stole the big book. And I was sensitive. I didn't want to talk to anybody about money, for which I had none, you know. So I stole the big book. And they didn't say to read it, they just said, "Don't read without it." So I never read it. Until I got sober. I was a stranger in AA for 10 years, from 60 to 70. I started going to meetings in 57 when I was in college. The whole class, you know, and
It was a social studies class, and they introduced me to us, to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the course started introducing me in 1960. And I stayed away from people. I came to the meeting when it started, not early. And as soon as it was over, I went up and got my court card signed. And so I was a stranger for 10 years. People came over to me, and they'd say hello, and I'd say hi. Sometimes they'd give me their phone number. I never asked them for their phone number. And they'd give me their phone number. I never called them. Sometimes they'd ask me for mine. If I had one, I'd give it to them. They never called me either, so it was kind of a mutual feeling. And I stayed away from people, and I was a stranger. And they had signs that said, "We care." I was lonely. They didn't care. I needed a job. They didn't care. Because they didn't know. I stayed away from them. So I couldn't understand why they had this sign that said, "We care," and they didn't care. Anyway. And my last arrest was in January 1970. I'm walking down the street in Van Nuys. I collected my last unemployment money. I wasn't eligible for anymore. I'm heading to the, I'm spending my unemployment money, right, in the bars. And I'm heading to the third bar to meet some new friends. I got an old $39 Jim Clinton suit on. It's way too small, shiny and sensitive areas, 8 or 9 years old. I got a clip on tie because in the bars, with a wrap around tie, you get in a beef, I choke you to death, right? So I wore a clip on tie. Hey, Barry, this is my clip on tie. My wife, she's hiding this and throw them in the trash, right? She hates it. And I keep digging it out, putting it back in my pocket. It's an ugly old fire. But then so's the jacket. It's ugly. And the pants. I bought the pants in a thrift store for 65 cents. The fly don't work, but The jacket cost me $3.95 in the thrift store in Ventura. Oh, I like to go shopping in Ventura, go Frisco, down on Main Street. $3.95, I don't know how many years I've been wearing this. I don't have any new stains on the bill. But at least I'm not wearing Jim Clinton anymore. So I'm heading to the third bar to meet some new friends, and two bikers come up behind me with a two-by-four, and they're going to roll me. You hear that, man? And they dropped me from the rear. And I got up and I got the 2x4 away from them. And I wiped them out with their own 2x4. You didn't take my unemployment money. And the police came and arrested these guys for rolling a drunk. And then they arrested the drunk. I went to jail again. And I went in front of the judge. And when I go in front of the judge, I'm embarrassed. Yeah, okay. I'm guilty. Everybody in the court knows I'm guilty. So I don't look at people. I look down. The judge is up there. He's looking down. We're all looking down. And this judge said 180 days in jail, and I looked up. I couldn't believe that. 180 days for drunk walking. I had 6 drunk driving convictions. And the most I ever got was 90 days. And this guy's given me 180 days for drunk walking. And so I started pleading with him. Give me a chance you can send me to Alcoholics Anonymous, Your Honor. I hear it works. And I pleaded with him, and he suspended my sentence, and he allowed me to come again to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I made one change. I wouldn't bring out my court card because I don't like rejection. And frequently, the leader of the meeting or the secretary of the meeting, when they sign my court card, they give me a little lecture. Just sign the court card, man. They give me no lecture. But they would say, "Did you know that A is for the people that want it?" I'd say, "No, I didn't know that." Or they'd say, "You don't want A showed up at a court." I'd say, "Neither do I, pal."
during a whole meeting. Why don't you just find the quote? They have an attitude. So I got an attitude. Right? So, anyway, I wouldn't have the court card. And I went to meetings for 3 months. I drank, but not as often. I never drank before the meetings, only after. And I did that until the early part of April, 1970. And I got a call from a guy. And he says, "Hey, Don, this is Andy. I remember you. He's a little fishy guy." I wasn't too happy about hearing from him, but hey, somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous called me. And that was impressive. He said, "I'm not going to that meeting where I met you. I'm going to this other meeting with this other guy. You want to go along with us?" And I said, "Yeah," enthusiastically, because I was going to go to that meeting, the Monday night meeting and Shadow Ranch meeting, and I hated that meeting. At the beginning of the meeting, everybody in the room gave their first name and their date of sobriety. Every time I showed up, I had a new date of sobriety, and I'm sensitive, right? And so I jumped at the chance to go with these guys after another meeting. So I met them. They were both old farmers. They had a month and a half sobriety. One of them was that snorer that I told you about up here. And the other one was a little fishy guy that called me up, right? So we're heading to the meeting, and the little fishy guy is driving, and he turns around. And he says, "When's the last time I had a drink, Don?" And I don't like people that cry. You know, they'd ask personal questions, like, "How's your wife?" "She's bitter. What's all this to you?" Or, "Hey, Don, what kind of work do you do?" "Oh, I'm hardcore. I'm enjoyable." Or, "Let's go to the coffee shop after the meeting with a friendly." I didn't have a down payment on a hot dog. And so I'm real sensitive about everything, and this guy's asking me, "When's the last time I had a drink?" But I was honest when I answered him, and I said, "Saturday. This is Monday. I got my new sobriety date." And he said, "Saturday?" Like he was shocked. "Big deal. That's an alcohol. I don't like people that assault me, even as a girl." And so I wanted to minimize my guilt, and I said, "Well, I just got drunk on beer." I said, "Beer? Maybe you're not an alcoholic, Don." I spent the next 15 minutes trying to convince him and the other old timer I was an alcoholic. "Hey, I haven't had a drink since." I appreciate that. I'm grateful for that guy, because in all probabilities, he's the first one that ever got me to open up and admit that I was an alcoholic. And so I'll always be grateful to him. And anyway, I started going to meetings with those guys, and they go early. Can you believe that? An hour and a half early. They make the coffee and put the tables out, long tables, and put the chairs around the tables, and put the literature out, and put the ashtrays around. We could smoke in the meetings then. And there was plenty of time, an hour and a half, so I didn't help them. I watched them. And for no reason at all, on the third night of going with him, I went over and I took the ashtrays and I started putting them around the room. And I became the ashtray sorter out of chairman of my own group. And I started feeling a little bit of part of the age, just doing that little job. Putting those ashtrays out and then picking them up after the meeting, right? Cleaning them up, getting them ready for next week. Caesar's Palace, fresh out of no good. Golden Nugget. Oh, there's another good one. A lot of casino ashtrays in my own group. And these guys would set up the room, and they'd put their keys down in the front. I don't want to sit in the front. I want to sit back in the rear where Pete Madero is back there, you know. Can you hear me, Pete? I played Santa Claus for his family in 1970, Christmas of 70. He hadn't forgiven me yet. They were supposed to sit on my lap. I sat on their lap. Anyway. I don't want to sit in the front. You want to sit in the back where you can look around, see who's coming in late, see who's wearing what, see who's hitting on who. You can't see that in the front. And if you look around, turn around, stop, and look at all of them, when they're doing that, then they're all looking at you, you know. So it's embarrassing you sitting up front. I want to sit in the back. But these guys would put their keys down in the front, and I'm trapped because I'm with them. And my wife gave me a house key. I put it down. Hey, I was back in. I don't know what to do in the front. I know what you're doing in the back. So what are you doing in the front? And so I pretended like I was listening. Yeah. And you know, slowly I became a listener because of their example. And people would get up, as you know, from your knees, and tell in a general way what they were like and what had happened to them and what they were trying to be like today. And, you know, all I had on my mind was what I was like, what I was like, and what I was like. You know, and that was 31 years ago and a few months. I now have a what it was like, what happened, and what happened. I still have a what it's like now. Who come to a convention and brag about a $3.95 jacket? But I got it what happened to Alan. What happened for me lasted a whole long time. What happened for me was that I came for 10 years and never got 30 days. What happened for me was somebody from Alcoholics Anonymous called me up. And what happened for me is that I sat in the front because of those guys. I was trapped. And because of that, I was able to hear people get out and tell their stories, and I could relate to some of them. I heard Clancy when I was a newcomer. I didn't relate to anything he said. Well, I mean, he was smart, you know. And Clancy said he'd drink, and he'd get his false courage, and he'd get in the fight. I didn't identify with that. I fought for years before I ever took my first drink. I know you don't believe it, because I'm so lumpy and dumpy, but I used to be mean and mean. I fought 11 years in the ring. I fought featherweight, lightweight, light welterweight, welterweight, middleweight, and light heavyweight. Went from mean and mean to lumpy and dumpy. Didn't fight flyweight. I wasn't even born a flyweight. And I never fought heavyweight. But now I'm fighting overweight. I didn't identify with Clancy. He got false courage and get in the fight. False out for years. Didn't need a drink. And so, but I heard a guy named Keith called him. And Keith was from Bakersfield here. He went to Bakersfield College and he won the national JC championship in football. And he was on that team and he got a scholarship up to Stanford University. And he went up there and he couldn't cut it up there with all those rich kids. He lacked confidence. And so he left there and he went to San Jose State. When he started talking about the lack of confidence, I hooked into that. Because I've always had a problem with lack of confidence. All my life, lack of confidence. When he was up there talking, I think back about 8th grade, 9th grade, didn't matter, but 8th grade, Mrs. Powell would say to me, "Okay, Donald, you're trying to give a report." I'd say, "Can I get it tomorrow, Mrs. Powell?" She said, "No, you said that yesterday, Donald. If you don't get up and give it today, I'm going to have to give it in there." I take the yes, big deal. I don't talk in front of people. I have never spoken in front of people in my life. When I get in front of people, I freeze. My mind goes blank. And so don't do it. Simple as that. I'm sure I identify with that lack of confidence. I'm a nail biter, too. I don't know about you, but I'm a nail biter. And that's for the same reason. Lack of confidence. I'm an alcoholic for that reason. This may not be your reason for being here, but believe me, it's mine. Lack of confidence. And I can remember sitting in the front row listening to somebody talking, and I remember that when I go in the bar and I take a drink, my lack of confidence is subsided. And as I continue drinking, it go away. I could talk to people. I've always had that problem, lack of confidence. Didn't know it until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and sat in the front row and started becoming aware of myself because of other people's examples. Anyway, people talk about their spouses, right? Especially Keith, he always talked about his. And he loved her, fell in love with her again, and I think to myself, I've never fallen out of love of mine. I've always loved her. Why do you think I keep trying to get back in the house? I love her. Anyway, I think about my wife. I met her when we were 17, and I sparked her for 14 months. And then we got married 9 months, and a minute later, she had a little kid. And I'm saying, well, because I'm going to the bars, and I'm spending money and time that should have gone toward the family. So I try to make it up to them. Take them up to Lake Arrowhead. Shut them up. Let them look at the lake. And we come down the mountain, and the original McDonald's was in San Bernardino on Jordan Baseline. And I'd go there, and I'd buy a bunch of hamburgers and fries and steaks, and I'd eat all of mine and half of theirs. And I'd watch other people, because I've always been a compare. And I'd see a guy going down the street with his wife in the front, and a kid or two in the back, and they're all bubbly, and the wife up in the front giving the guy a tension bill, she'd be rubbing his neck. And if I'd see that, I'd say to my wife, look at that. Why don't you ever rub my neck? She'd say, I don't know, I never think about it. And that used to floss me. Why don't you ever think about me, you know? I do. I don't see. When I think about that in the front row, hey, all those rides, you know, got to make it up to her. Get some of the joke off of me. Take her on a ride. Got arrested again. I'll take her to Oxnard. That'll cheer her up. She can look at the ocean, you know. And then we go by on the outskirts of Camarillo with Adora Farm. Did you ever go there, Patty? Patty's husband isn't here. He's up in Alaska. And I miss him. So hi, Kim. Now she's got to buy the cake and send it to him. Anyway, and so you go to Adora Farms, no admission charge. You can look at all the cows and the bulls. And then we go by another McDonald's. McDonald's was expanding just like I was. And I'd buy a bunch of hamburgers and fries and shakes, eat all of mine, half of theirs. See another guy going down the road with his wife, getting his neck rubbed. And say to my wife, look at that. Why don't you once ever think about rubbing my neck? You know? And every once in a while she'd put her hand up, make the attempt, and I'd smack it down. I'd say, keep your hand off of me. You can't think of it on your own. I want you to. And I got an attitude. Then I go back to the bar, right? I like lively bars. I don't like dead bars. And so if nobody was playing the jukebox, I'd go up and look over the selections because I don't play junk. I play songs that have a message. Can you see that? The Impossible Dream by Jack Jones. That was a great one. Little Green Apples by O.P. Smith. When O.P. Smith was singing about his wife, he was singing about my wife. Now, she wasn't that way, but that's the way I wanted her to be, right? You remember that song? Little green apples, it don't snow in Indianapolis in the summer. And he'd call her out in the middle of the day, and she would drop what she was doing and come down her knees, but she was made that way. Oh, that was beautiful. And that's the way I wanted my wife to be, right? And so here was C1 on the jukebox, I call quarter in, punch C1 three times. Then if nobody else played the jukebox, I'd go for another quarter in, punch in one more, three more times. And about the 12th time, I hear Lou Dean Apples, some big guy come up to me and say, hey, Bottle Ass, why don't you play D8? You know, and I'm sensitive. Don't call me Bottle Ass or Yellow Belly or Liver Lift or Purple Skin. So I punched D8, just like you said. And I turn around and punch him. He never knew it was coming. I cold cocked him. Call me Bottle Ass. And the bartender with 86 meter, I didn't call him Barland, he called me there. And yet I gotta go to the bar and be a newcomer somewhere else. My wife, you call him a bar. I never got 30 days in any bar, man. Never. I was always a newcomer. I've been a newcomer still, right? What's the new kid's name? Anyway. So I've been a newcomer all my life. So I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a newcomer. I've been a newcomer for 10 years. Big deal, man. Hey, right? I'm a newcomer everywhere. And, but I'm listening to people, and I'm reflecting back on this marriage, about those rides, right? Taking on those rides, trying to make it up to her. She didn't want to go with me. I had a revoked license. I drove for 12 years and 9 months with a revoked license. And she didn't want to go with me. I used to beg her. I'd do dishes for her, I'd vacuum for her, I'd do them both in 10 minutes, I was bad. And I miss a lot of spots, but my motor was valid. Get them in the car. Take them to Newhall, that'll cheer them up. Right? Out in Newhall, they had the William S. Hart Ranch. No admission charge. Could go around looking at all the turkeys and the chickens and the pigs. Get in on a McDonald's. Buy a bunch of hamburgers and fries and shakes, eat all of mine, half of theirs. See another guy going down the road getting his neck rubbed. And not saying anything to her because she wanted to break it. She didn't want to rub it. She used to lay awake at night trying to think of a way to snuff me. She was not happy at all. I took a lot of hope and sparkle out of her eyes. And I replaced it with despair. And that's the best I could do, because I'm an alcoholic. And I would think about things like that. Why do people get jobs and they go on their lives and they fulfill dreams. I'm a dreamer. I've been a dreamer all my life. I don't ever want to take my dreams away. Some of my dreams I was able to fulfill. Some of my dreams I had to replace with lesser dreams. In the final years that I drank, and I really don't know, 5 years, 4 years, 6 years, my big dream was a daydream, and I'm sitting at the bar, and my daydream is someday I'm going to be sober. Someday I'm going to have some respect and love from my family. Someday I'm going to have a job and I can provide for them. And that's my daydream, and I can't get there because I can't stop drinking. And I keep going to jail, and I got a bad arrest record and a bad work record, and I got nothing going for me. And I'm sitting in the knees and I'm thinking about things like that. And little by little, I started putting a little formula together. One of the first things that I did was, well, I didn't do it on purpose, it happened. I was at the Nest, and it was a candlelight meeting, and I had $21 on me, a 20 and a 1. And the basket went around, I threw my box in, and then we went to the coffee shop, at Edwards Coffee Shop, and scratched that, and I went up to pay, and I pulled out my 20, and it was a 1. Son of a bitch. I put $20 in the basket. That was the last time I ever went to a candlelight meeting. I don't go to candlelight meetings anymore. Then I went to 20 meetings and I didn't put nothing in. Anyway. So, I'm 4.5 months sober, and a guy named Barr is at the participation part of the meeting, and they called on him. He came up, and he was saying, don't take that first drink. One drink's too many, and 1,000 isn't enough. And I've heard that lots of times over the years, and so I'm not paying too much attention. I'm biting away, because I'm a nail biter. And because of the words that he said, I pulled my finger out and I thought to myself, I wonder if I could put this program to work on my fingernail biting problem. They say, any problem you have, you know, you want to lose some weight? Put the plug in the plate. Maybe I could quit biting. Then I thought, well, I got a little left there. I'll go ahead and hit my bottom. I quit tomorrow. That one I'm biting. Then after the meeting, we did the cleanup. And then after the cleanup, went over to the coffee shop. And there's 35, 40 AAs and Al-Anon sitting around. And there's this Al-Anon fighting away. And I walked up to her and I said, don't take that first bite. One bite too many in a 1,000 in enough. Because I heard those words in AA. Do you know what? I never knew it that they apply. Now I know. I sat down with her, and we started sharing one nail biter to the other. I told her, if you don't take the first bite, there's going to be growth. Right? But I heard those words in AA, right? The nails grow. I'm going to talk about that. I told her, if you don't take the first bite, there's going to be fringe benefits. I didn't know what they were, Scott. I never had nails in my life. What the hell do I know about nails? Well, I got nails, and I've had nails for years. We quit batting that night. She has real long nails now. But I've always been ashamed of my hands. I've always hidden them in my pockets, or under my armpits, or under my bottle bud, or, you know. I'm ashamed, okay? And I no longer am ashamed. I got self-respect in the hand area. Hey, that's a fringe benefit. But the biggest fringe benefit I got is for years, my wife used to think, used to ask me for back scratch. Best I could do with a nub rub, right? And now I can scratch her back and she loves it. And so she's a beneficiary of that. And when I'm 5.5 months over, I'm going down the route to get some chocolate ice cream. Okay, I got a problem in that area too. So I still got a revoked license. I drove for 2.5 years in sobriety with a revoked license. I brought Johnny Harris up to Tehachapi with the state prison to the conference. I had a revoked license, man. Perfect driver. Do you know I never got a ticket 12 years and 9 months? Hope I don't. I spit on the mic. Now if I touch it, I might get electrocuted. Anyway. So I drove up here, I got Johnny up there, right? Have a revoked license, man, sliding all over the road. But I'm a perfect driver, 2 hands on the wheel. And so I'm 5.5 months sober, and my wife's in the car, and I'm not drinking. I'm not a drinking 5.5 months. So I'm a perfect driver, 2 hands on the wheel. 1 eye in the rear view mirror. Tread on all 4 tires. Now, heading down the road. You remember, huh? And a guy went by me with his wife and she was rubbing his neck. And I didn't say anything. See, a little girl just started sitting in. Just going to the meetings and not drinking in between. And when he was out of sight, I hope my wife hadn't seen it. And for the first time in our marriage, I put my hand up and I gently started rubbing her neck. Oh, she loved it. She moaned. Mmm. Oh, I hadn't had that much response from her since I saved both, you know. I rolled around 3 times, rubbing her neck. listening to the moon. I missed the moon. Then a couple of days later, we went down to Barnes. I don't buy my ice cream in the same place, okay? Cashiers might think I got a problem. So I'm a revoker. So I'm going 34 and a half on the 35. Barnes is coming up 2 blocks on the left side of my signal early. And a hand went up on my neck. And I started getting a neck rub. And now I'm getting attention from my wife. Just going to meetings and not drinking in between. Good things are happening. Oh, that was something. When I was 11 and a half months old, I didn't tell you when I was 5 days sober, did I? 5 days sober, the pushy guy comes over to me and says, how come you don't stick your hand out, Don? Say hello to people. Try to get acquainted. Other people here are sensitive too, you know. So only because he was watching, I went over to a couple guys and I said, hi, I'm Don. They said, oh, Don. He introduced himself and they ignored me, tricky bastards. So I went over to 5 or 6 people and I figured they weren't carrying on a personal conversation. I said, hi, I'm Don. They said, oh, Don. And all of them introduced themselves to me. And then they ignored me. And they were talking about somebody getting a 1-year cake or something. I thought, what a tricky place this is. I'm a newcomer, Bruce. I'm trying to get acquainted. They all ignore me. Then I saw this man all alone. I knew he wasn't a click. He looked like he had about a half an hour of sobriety. He wasn't smiling. He wasn't putting out his hand to anybody. I could help the guy out. I had 5 days, you know. Hey, stick your hand out, pal. Other people here are sensitive too, you know. You're not the only one. So that was my attitude, right? So I went over to him and I was, I was careful because I don't want to scare away the newcomer. And I said, hi, I'm Don. And he said, hello, Don. And I deepened my voice so I could get in command, Rob, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I said, how long have you been sober, Arvo? He said 6 and a half years, why? I thought I'm not. Months over. I'm going to get a 1-year cake in 2 weeks. And I'm looking forward to it. I'm talking to Kirk, who was a snorer, and Andy, the pushy little bastard. And we were talking, and I wanted Kirk to give me a cake at the Tuesday night meeting, Andy the Sunday night meeting, and they both given me the honor of giving them their 1-year cake a month before. Now I'm getting mine. I'm going to get a 1-year cake. Oh, man, that was something. And this newcomer lady came up. She said, hello, I'm Vera. And we said, hello, Vera. And then we ignored her when I'm talking about my And Vera went walking away, mumbling little nasties under her breath. And I heard her. And I went over and I brought her back. I told her what we were talking about. And Vera's still with us, Scott. Vera, I gave her a 30-year cake. And Vera knows. Like you know, like your wife knows, like everybody, Pete Madero up there knows, like Matt and his gang, and Bruce and Barry, and I could go around the room, Patty Weaver. There are no clicks in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're bonds. And the bonds are forever. They're not temporary. I hadn't seen Pete in years. Pete Madero up there. And I ran into him. And I could go around the room, like with Bill... O'Brien's family here this morning at the old timers meeting, right? I have a bond with them and it's forever. It's not temporary. It's not transient. And anyway, I got my 1-year cake, okay? And different AAs gave me my 1-year cake. I got a whole year in without a drink. And when I was 5 years sober, I asked my wife to come to the AA meeting, give me my 5-year cake. And she came. 5 years without a drink. That was fantastic. And then, Matt, are you listening? My 10-year cake, I think, I don't call a judge that. Let him give me a cake. Yeah, let them know it works.
Well, I ruptured my appendix and I got peritonitis. And I was laid up for 2.5 months. I didn't take no Shamir cake. But Matt, 3 weeks before my 11th birthday, I called the judge up. And I said, Your Honor, you sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1970 and I'm still going to the meeting. In 3 weeks, you're going to give me a case with 11 candles on it representing 11 years without a drink. Is there any possibility you could come to the meeting and present the cake? And after a pause, they said, that'd be a privilege. He asked if he could bring his wife. Neither one of them had ever been to an AA meeting before. He knew a lot of people there. Is Joyce sitting here? Joyce? The tape lady? Not here? I wanted to tell her that that night, Norm Alfie was the speaker, and it was a perfect meeting. And I got the judge handed me the cake, and I blew out the candles, and I thanked him on behalf of the California Highway Patrol and the LAPD and San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, Culver City Police Department, Englewood Police Department, L.A. County Sheriff's Department, Oceanside Police Department, San Francisco Police Department, Barstow Police Department, Clark County, Nevada Sheriff's Department, Denver County Sheriff's Department, Azusa Police Department, I didn't even know they had a police department. One night I'm in a bar, it's 1:30 in the morning, and I'm not drunk. And I only got a half an hour before the bar's closed. And I started thinking. You know, if you're drinking, don't think, just drink. Every time I think in the bars, I get in trouble. And I started thinking that night. I can't get drunk by 2. They don't close in Vegas. I'll go to Vegas and finish my drunk. They're always open. So I left this bar in L.A., the Continental on 12 and Figueroa. Oh, that was a lovely place. And I'm taking off to Vegas. And I got captured in the Azusa. So I thank him on behalf of my neighbors. They were all grateful I was sober. And I thanked him for my family. They were in the front row that night when I took that 11-year cake. But most of all, I thanked him for me. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't even know if I can get the judge off my back. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to go to these dumb meetings and just exist. No more fun. And that hasn't been true. But that's what I thought then. The fun's over. You know what the fun was for me, the good old days? Going to jail, losing jobs, getting the bitterness from my family. You know, I don't like being alone. I don't know about you. I like crowded beaches. I like crowded parks. I went to Korea. I took a whole army of Marines with me. I didn't go alone. Only time I want to go alone anywhere is to the toilet, okay? Because I'm sensitive. And I was alone. I was alone for not weeks, not months, but a number of years. Alone in my own house because my family wouldn't talk to me. Alone because I couldn't find a job that I could keep. Alone. I'm always alone, and I don't like being alone. And I thank the judge for my family, but most of all for me. There's a lot that I haven't said, and there's a lot that I can't say, shouldn't say. But fear started building in my life because of my drinking early. And I woke up one time and I couldn't speak, and then it went away finally. And then I woke up another time and I couldn't speak. Before I got sober, 6 months before I got sober. And then I woke up and I couldn't talk at all. The fear had completely enveloped me. I was afraid to turn left. I was afraid to turn right. I was at the VA hospital in Sawtelle, and I went to the doctor because I knew something was wrong. And when I went, the nurse said, "You're odd, and this is even. They have the odd and even program." So this was the even day, and so I couldn't see the doctor because I'm odd. So I couldn't get help there. And I went out into the hall, and I went to the director of the alcoholic treatment program, and I said, "Help me." And he said, "I'm kind of tied up now, Don. Can you come back in about a half an hour and I'll help you?" And I couldn't get help there. And I walked back out into the hall, and there was another fellow ATP there, alcoholic treatment member, and I took his hand and I said, "Help me." And he knew something was wrong. And he took me directly in, past the nurse, right to the doctor, and said, "Something's wrong with this guy. He needs some help right now." And they locked me up in Brentwood. And I was in a lockup ward there for 33 days. And I had sessions daily with a psychiatrist. And when I was able to say broken sentences, he allowed me a Bronx pass, and I went to some AA meetings at the facility. And when I was able to say four sentences, they cut me loose, and they thought the best environment for me was to go back home to the family that didn't talk to me, to the family that didn't want me around, to the family that thinks I'm disgusting, to the family that's ashamed of me. I got nothing going for me. And now I'm in AA, and I'm thinking all those things, and little by little, good things are starting to happen. And you bet I thank that judge. I thank him for me, because I got to come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank you because I got to stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love you.